for that.
Alright, I have turned on the record button.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So we're recording.
I love when there's no notice about this.
Eh. Go, we do it live.
That's it.
No preparation. You're getting our thoughts off the dome.
Always a good idea. Unlike last week, I'm back to being a responsible adult, therefore I have done zero preparation.
Yeah, buddy.
So we're gonna fire into this one hot. Hopefully we're not talking about anything Lovecraft or anything involving a one John Travolta.
No.
My knowledge is minimal at best.
It's a good one. I actually have no idea how this one came up on the list, so I think you put it on there. Or maybe I put it on there and forgot that I put it on there.
That's way more likely.
But we'll see. All right, so Brandon Chalmers, my friend, what,
sir,
are you geeking on since you have come back from the AOC hon?
I don't really know. You know what? No, I can geek on something. So when I was down the beach, one of my last days was a little bittersweet. I got the chance to go to my favorite place, which is Assateague, and got a chance to kind of see the sunrise at Assateague, which is really nice. And I came back and I hooked up with my wife's cousin, who was 17, and we went up. And we went longboarding together. Remember, I've been talking about the fucking longboard and everything? Mm-hmm. So I've been boot scooting all over Ocean City with the thing. Managed to go out with one of those there young people and do the fun things. yeah. Of course, I was a moron, and I went out and did a 10-mile bike ride and then came back and then immediately got back in the car and went longboarding.
Oof.
Yeah, I was probably off the bike, let's see, off the bike from Assateague into Ocean City, back up to where we were staying at 79th Street. I'd say some total, maybe I was off, from like off the bike to on the board, 40 minutes tops.
Wow. Oh my God.
So, yeah. So we went out to the inlet down there, if you're familiar with the area, skated the parking lot there, skated from like the inlet all the way to the end where the concrete kind of stops and then back again. I don't know, probably, a mile, maybe 2 miles worth of like skating up another boardwalk and then around the parking lots and what have you. And I was wiped. My calves were done.
Nice.
Just done.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah, it's a totally good feeling. For once, a proper leg day.
Yes.
So the idea was that I had been getting ads, of course, because, they're listening. And when I started talking about longboards, it's like suddenly they're like, do you want to get helmets and gloves and other stuff? I was like, fuck it, I got that stuff. So then I saw this thing, I think we talked about this before, where it was like basically a stick that would let you paddleboard on a longboard. So I went online after I got back and I went and picked up what's called a Big Kahuna stick. think of it like a giant oar, only instead of having a big paddle at the bottom, it's got like a rubber kind of half moon foot on it. So the idea is you extend it out, you hop on the board, and you basically paddleboard your way across the thing. You know, couple this way, cross it over, couple this way, and it's adjustable, so this way people of multiple heights can use it. I can also break the thing down properly and be able to store it, and when I break it down, it's not much taller than the board, which is actually really nice.
That's pretty cool.
So I used it today. I just got it in today for the first time. Used it today, and it about destroyed me. Just destroyed me. Because I don't think I was ready for how much of an upper body workout it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I'd never done paddleboarding, and, like, it had been years since I've even been in a canoe, so it's like, you know, rowing or anything, it's like, it's not something I normally do. So I, overconfident, hop out after I had already been, in the gym doing a bunch of other cardio and everything. I was like, oh, yeah, before I leave, I should probably spend, like, 20, 25 minutes. I'll just go scoot around the parking lot. I'll try the thing out. I'll get plenty of time to do it. And I go out there, and I push up the first time. I'm like, okay, this was fine. And then I got to a slight hill, and I hated everything. Because suddenly I couldn't just put my foot down and coast my way up the thing. I had to fucking dig my way through the parking lot. Right, yeah. So on the plus side, I've managed to find my new favorite exercise and also my new least favorite exercise.
Awesome.
So anytime I think I'm going to have daylight and the ability, I'm going to go scooting around. We got a big parking lot where I work because it's in a big industrial park. So I'm going to go scooting around there and then from like one park to the other and then do all that. So I think it'll be another way to get some cardio in, some extra work, and trying to tone everything up and get some more daylight because I've learned that the sun is good for me.
Nice. You're like a plant. You need the sun.
Seriously, I'm such a grumpy fuck when I don't see daylight for a while. I really...
Yeah.
I learned that. Shout out to the fine people at Penguin Random House Publishing. when they were kind enough to take patience and hire me and stuck me in a room with no windows in a building that was built in the 40s as a bomb shelter.
Jesus. Do you have a sun lamp?
No, I mean where I work now is in a warehouse that has, you know, skylights and big open bay doors and everything. So like everything's fine now, but like when it was happening, it was soul crushing. Like I was totally fine with the job. People were super nice, company's great to work for. Honestly, like if you've been half the bidding, I can say with confidence. I worked in the data department, so I had one of those stupid computer jobs. But the company's super great, everything else I get. But because the building had been built forever ago, no cell signal at all. And the only window that you could see daylight out of was in the bathroom.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Man, that's no good.
Yeah, no. It got to the point where, like, I would have my headphones in. I'd have a podcast in one ear and a white noise machine in the other. Oof. So this way I could hear nature so that I wouldn't go stir crazy and flip a desk.
Yeah, Jesus, that's tough, man.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Anywho, yeah, so if you end up seeing a fat dude on a skateboard using a paddleboard thing like a moron because I can't leave well enough alone to just be fine with a skateboard, be sure to say howdy, boy. Also, still looking for that skate crew. So any volunteers for anybody who wants to roll deep, I think we can find ourselves an artist and make ourselves some gear up and what have you, and roll as a sick-ass skate crew.
Jean jackets and stuff.
Yeah, cut-off denim vests and shit like that, and I ain't judgy. You want to pick yourself up a longboard from Walmart, that's fine. All I need to know is that you're going to roll.
That's awesome.
So what about you, Jamie? What are you geeking out about?
If you are a fan of Kamen Rider, around this time of year is when the pictures and the advertisements for the next series always pop up. And the next Kamen Rider stuff, it's already, you know, we're already seeing the belt, we're seeing some toys and stuff like that. So it's always a danger to get too excited about Kamen Rider or too down on Kamen Rider. Because, like,
you've got Marvel syndrome. You get way too many spoilers, and then the thing starts eating its own tail.
Well, no, it's not that. Like, yeah. Sometimes when you see the first pictures of the suit, you know, the fandom will say, this looks like ass, this looks like terrible, this looks like the worst suit.
Because it's the internet.
But I've learned to never judge a suit until you see it in motion. Because there have been some really weird-looking ones that have become, like, my favorite show. And there have been some amazing-looking ones that have turned out to be a garbage show. So, like, you know, judging a suit by just a still frame is a exercise in futility. So I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
I'm geeking out about the belt this year because it looks so cool and I really want to get it. And I'm talking about a toy that is meant for children 12 and usually under.
Okay, first question, will it fit?
Well, they have belt extenders, so they will fit. Also, I have a conversion thing that I made out of a real leather belt, so I could actually figure out how to wear it. But this thing, this rider theme. Every Kamen Rider has a theme,
right? Right.
This year's or next year's rider is going to be a time based theme, and so the Henshin device is a belt that has two slots for like these wristwatch things that are like this big.
Okay.
And you turn the face, you click the wristwatch, it says the thing like Kamen Rider or whatever, and you right. slot it into the side. It okay. cocks to the side a little bit, and there's a countdown, and then you flip it, and the belt goes and locks into place. And
nice!
And the LED screen shows like 2018 or whatever year it is, and it has some like Kamen Rider, like some crazy voice thing. And I saw that, and I was like, I need to get this belt.
Wow, because yeah, I was gonna say you started slow, where it was like, yeah, so it's like a chess timer that you like pop down, and then you slide it in the side, and then all of a sudden you were like, hold on, and went full exhibit with that shit, and was like, yo, dog, I heard you like clocks, so let me put a clock inside your clock while I clock your clock.
Yeah,
and just spun that thing around,
spins it around, locks into place, and
God damn it,
it's gonna be so good, and the show. Might be garbage, which will always tint my feeling about the driver. So I'm holding off. I'm holding on. Off.
Because you can take the video of the transformation and set it to Prince's 1999, and it won't matter.
Oh my God, that's true.
You have so many time-based songs that you can set that to. Yeah. Honestly, the slow montage of all the loving moments of the rider embracing his love would end up being set to Time After Time.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many.
That's true.
That you can do.
And the neat thing about this show, it's a time-based show, so it's technically the third time-based rider, but it's like the second one where they're going to go into the past and meet other riders from the past.
Nice.
Which means the Henshin devices are going to be themed from the past riders in the show continuity. So, like, there's a very good possibility that we'll have Ichigo on one of these clock faces. Like, old school Hongo dude.
Yeah.
On the watch face.
Yeah,
so, like,
Kamen Hall. Yeah, hell yeah.
I am unreasonably excited about this Henshin device.
I don't think that's unreasonable, Jamie. Like, the only downside that I could possibly pick out of this is you have only the opportunity to be let down by them not doing something that you want.
That's true. That's
that
true.
That is really the only thing that you're playing with when it comes to fire on this one, is if you didn't get the rider that you're looking for.
Yeah.
I could see ultimately you're going to get to the last episode, you're like, he would have been perfect here. You could have had him.
Well, the neat thing is, since Kamen Rider Decade, which was like, you know, the big anniversary show, I think he was like the 10th writer, I don't remember, it was something weird, but they started making cards from all the previous writers. Since then, like, every Henshin device in the series has had a legendary version of it, even if they didn't show up in the show. So yeah. Like, Kamen Rider Forze, his Henshin device has had all these switches. They had some old switches with the old Kamen Rider faces on it, so you could like slot it into the belt. The Kamen Rider, the fruit one, Kamen Rider Gaim, had a yeah. bunch of lock seeds that had previous writers on them. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
So even if they don't show up in the show, they're going to be toys that have, like,
gotcha.
The
okay.
old school dudes.
Right on. So you're still going to be able to buy the thing that you want, even if you don't potentially see it.
Yeah, but you gotta, if you're going to have the old school belt, you gotta have them in the show. So, like,
not arguing.
I'm unreasonably excited about this series, and people already have been dogging on it. Like, apparently the writer and the people behind the show are responsible for some of the more lame ones in the series. So, but I'm gonna wait until I get five episodes in.
Yes,
I'm gonna give it yes. the Mike Dent five episode thing.
There you go.
You do five episodes, and then you can decide whether or not you're gonna stick with it.
That makes total sense, and good on you for not being an internet douchebag and just immediately deciding that something's trash because it's not the exact thing that you want.
Yeah. So, I have something interesting for us before we hop into our thing.
Oh, shit.
We have a email that is not
We have an
from,
email?
We have an email that's not from Grig. So
hey!
This is really cool.
Shit.
So, we got an email from Patrick, and unless people tell me or give me a handle that I can use, I'm only going to use first names because I don't want to blow people up on the spot.
That makes sense.
So, this is from Patrick. Good morning. I love the show and have been a big fan of both of you in the various previous podcast iterations.
Wow, okay, cool. Yeah. Thank you.
I have been working on a side hustle for several years. and have hit a milestone that has me hitting an inflection point and need some outside advice on it. For the past 7 years, I've been presenting at conventions multiple times a year. I started small with my local convention that I could make a day trip to now where I'm going cross country.
My top,
yeah, that's kind of awesome.
Good on ya.
My topics tend to be on the nerdy side of things, including video game design, deconstruction, board game collection tips, music history, and appreciation on subgenres, and a few simple interactive events that the audience tends to participate in.
Okay.
This past year, I made it a goal to step my game up in creating new content to bring it to other events. This is how I was able to be a first-time panelist at AwesomeCon,
okay,
Anime USA, and now three panels at PAX Prime.
Wow!
Which is amazing.
Man, yeah, like that, parlaying those two, and shout out to both of them. We in Super Art Fight have a great relationship with both of them. Have been in the ground floor with Ben at AwesomeCon since day one, and I will forever sing his praise. He's an outstanding person to work with, and awesome, for lack of a better way to put it, an awesome convention to go to. But
yeah, believe in Penrod. Getting in free to conventions is a nice perk. However, it is coming to the point where I want to see if I can take this hobby I enjoy doing and make it an additional income stream that I could do from time to time.
Okay.
And here we get to the question. My question is, knowing that you were part of Art Fight, what made you make the decision to get you to ask for compensation outside of the normal free badge? And what did you do to raise your profile to have people ask for you to go to an event rather than manually submitting your event to them? Also, how do I go about marketing myself to events that may never have heard of me outside of a website with limited information about events I work in? Is there a place where I can network with convention runners and start those conversations? Okay. Thank you for taking the time to read this, and I look forward to many more episodes of the podcast. I fucking did it, Patrick.
Awesome. Okay, so Jamie, let's take the questions and let's take them one at a time to make sure that we don't bowl over anything.
Right.
So do me a favor, head back to the question list and let's start tackling these things one at a time. We'll try and do it relatively quickly so we're not burning the entire episode on this, but let's do this a little thoroughly. All right. So what's the first question?
First one is, what made you make the decision to ask for compensation outside of the free badge? And what did you do to raise your profile to have people ask you to go to an event rather than manually submitting your event? So,
okay, hang on. So the first part is what caused us to ask for more compensation?
Yeah.
I think, and here's the thing, and Patrick, you should understand this. Your needs are going to be different than what Art Fight's needs are.
Right.
The majority of Art Fight's needs are based on travel cost and the amount of bodies we need to do a show. So in turn, we are required basically to either take a loss on a convention or ask for compensation fairly, not overstretch ourselves, be honest with these conventions and explain to them what's going on, but also take a value in yourself. You shouldn't be taking a bath on something unless it is an absolute passion project. You don't mind taking a bath on it.
Yeah, and our compensation, what I generally tell people is Art Fight asks for a couple of things. And it's usually travel fee, lodging, table space to sell stuff.
Yes.
And we can, if we get all three, we'll generally jump in. Oh, and like performance fee. Performance fee is kind of rare.
That one can be a bit of an extra. It is not necessarily a requirement for us.
Yeah, but if we get all three, the travel, the lodging, and table space to sell stuff, that's almost a guarantee that Art Fight will be at your show. If we can only get two out of those three, then we work within our group to kind of figure out what makes sense for us.
Right, and whether or not we can do it. The other thing is making sure that you're comfortable enough to be able to turn something down, but being honest about it. Yeah. We've had shows in the past where we like the people we're talking to. We like the idea of going. The problem is that we just can't afford it. We can't ask our artists to go out of pocket like that.
Yeah.
We can't ask ourselves to go out of pocket like that. Here's the secret of Art Fight too. The people who started Art Fight and who have been in it in the early stages have lost more money than we've made.
Yeah, I'm in the hole.
I am probably closer to being even than Jamie is, because I started a little later than he did. But it's the thing. Like, for as much fun as we have at this point now, it's all about breaking even for us.
Yeah.
You know, even for merch sales and stuff like that, that sort of thing is just to help us get whole again.
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money to take a bunch of us and go out and do a show. I mean, you can answer your own question. If you had a family of seven people and you needed to take them on vacation to, let's say, Connecticut for a convention, how much is it going to cost you to get up there? Just in vehicles, toll, gas, and food.
Mm-hmm.
You got to cover yourselves for those sort of things. Then there's lodging. Then there's, you know, just the weekend itself. You take your losses where you can, and you go, well, we're not going to cover food, but the rest of the stuff, let's try and combine together, carpool as much as possible, mm-hmm. and recoup some of our costs. This way we don't end up eating it.
That's why we do a lot of East Coast shows,
yeah.
Because the travel thing, we can drive places. Like,
yeah.
Driving to places is a lot easier than flying. If we get invited to do a show on the West Coast, it's really tough to justify that without a travel stipend of some kind.
Because
we got to fly out us and the rig and all that kind of stuff. So if you're running panels and you don't require like extra shipping stuff, maybe travel is less of a burden for you. So, like, you know, take that into consideration. Like, we're like a really big band.
Yeah, we are. And that's the thing. Like, and I personally, I tend to organize a lot of the logistics for Art Fight. And my rule has always been, is it within a 10-hour drive?
Right.
And I know that number sounds crazy, but if you've got a bunch of people driving with you and you rent a van, it's a lot more reasonable than you'd think. And it gives us the ability to do shows. You know, if we didn't have that rule, we wouldn't be able to do fun stuff in Asheville, North Carolina, and other places like that. Like, if you want to see the country, you got to be willing to move around. So that's what caused us to start asking for the compensation. It's literally just, we were losing money hand over fist and essentially had to just kind of just like cauterize the nerve and just go, look, we got it. We got to stop losing money.
Yeah, we need help, guys.
Right. And I have found, and I hope that most people feel the same way, be honest with your convention contacts. You're building relationships with these people.
Yeah.
You're going to be working with them in a lot of cases year after year. And even if it's not the same person next year, there's a good chance that the previous person is going to hand them notes about you. If you're difficult to work with, if you're too expensive, if you're too needy, if you're too much of a pain, people remember that sort of thing. Say yes, say thank you, be honest. Be straightforward with people, try not to be too difficult, and try and make sure that anything that you can help them with is even better, especially day of con or weekend of con. They're running around like crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
Please do your best to not be a problem for them. I get it. Things didn't go the way you wanted to. You showed up. The thing wasn't booked the way you wanted, whatever it is. Get a hold of them. Ask the questions, get it cleared up, and make sure you always do it with a smile. Make sure you always
be polite.
Yeah, be as polite as possible, because you're probably the 50th person that they've talked to today. It's only Friday. It's only 4:00 in the afternoon, and they've already been putting out fires all day.
Yeah.
When you get there, they're interested in making it better for you, but man, do they not want to hear attitude.
Okay, so the next question was, what did you do to raise your profile to have people ask you to go to an event rather than manually submitting? And I think that also combines with, like, how do you market yourself outside of a website? And I think I wrote him an email response, basically, but I said, we're still submitting to shows. Like, we never stop submitting to shows.
Yeah, I get that. But here's the other thing, too, to keep in mind. When we first started, Facebook didn't operate the way that it does now. When we had fan pages and we made a post, if we had 2,000 fans at the time, all 2,000 people saw what we posted.
True.
Now the way it works is you throw money into an imaginary hole and you see some of the people.
15 people might see it out of the 20.
Right, yeah. So like we do a regular post to, let's say we've got, what are we now, damn near 3,000 people, fans on Facebook or whatever it is.
I don't even pay attention anymore because it's so awesome.
Right, and it shows us the analytics of everything. I'd say out of those 3,000 people, it says 150 people see it. We go and we pay a fair bit of money, a couple hundred dollars worth of ads for let's say, a show. And that number maybe triples. So
yeah.
I would say you want to get in front of eyes at conventions. Here's the cool part about conventions. They tend to have other conventions tabled there. Go up and introduce yourself. Be super friendly. Make sure you invite them. If you got a free couple minutes or whatever it is, and there's a convention that's tabling there, you're at AwesomeCon and you want to go to Otakon, go up to the booth, introduce yourself, say, "Hey, I'm doing a panel here. I got invited as a guest. I'd like to start doing other cons. I've been a big fan of your con. Here's the time that I'm going to be going on. Here's my panel. Here's the panel room. If you get an opportunity, can you stop by? Come check me out and see if you like what you see."
Yeah, that's great, because you don't have to do a cold call. You don't have to do a cold email. And usually the people that are staffing those tables are like the decision makers for those cons.
Right. There's a good chance that someone who's sitting at that table working that booth has some sort of influence on the person who's in charge of booking guests or events or schedules or whatever it is. And if you go and do your panel and you're cutting the room up and you're super interesting and you're a lot of fun and you're low cost and you seem like you got your ass together, they're going to come back and they're going to rave. They're going to go, "Man, Patrick was really good. Yeah. Like, we got to get that guy." And somebody will go, "Did you get his information?" And they go, "Oh, yeah, no, he stopped by and did it later." Also, the follow-up. This is something that a lot of people aren't very good with. If you talk to someone, fan, con person, staff, whoever, you talk to them earlier in the day and you pitch your show or your panel to them and they show up and they happen to hang around a half second after you step off stage, go right to them. Bam. And thank them.
Hit them with a card.
Hit them with a card. Thank them for coming out. Let them know that you acknowledge their existence. If you don't get the opportunity, when you're up on stage, take a half second, make eye contact with them, shoot them a little finger gun, give them a little wave, whatever it is. Right. People remember that sort of thing. Like, when you're in a position, and for lack of a better way to put it, when you're up on stage, you're in a position of power. When you acknowledge people who are sitting in the audience that, "Hey, we had a personal interaction. You came out, you took my advice, and you're here." Even if they decide to leave, they took time out of their day, their scheduled day, to carve out part of their schedule and come see you. That's important. That's how you grow a fandom that way. Mm-hmm. If I've learned anything, the hardcore, the best fans that we have who are the most loyal, who keep coming out, are people we interact with all the time.
Yeah.
Not just on social media. You see them, walk by them, high five them. I've had to learn it myself. I'm really bad with names. I see all these faces at conventions. Anytime I see anyone I recognize at a con who's talked to me or come to a show, I send him a Facebook friend request. Because here's the thing. You can mute them. You can unfollow them. You don't have to agree with their life. What you do need to do, though, is learn their name, learn their face, and be able to walk by and say hi to them and have an idea what their name is. If it's close, you can go and talk to them. And if their name is Noah and you call them Neil and you go – and you're not sure and you walk up and you go, "Neil?" And they go, "No." And I was like, "I'm sorry. I see." And immediately they're like, "Oh, dude, don't worry about it. I know you talked to a bunch of people. Yeah, yeah." Like, get close. Those sort of things matter.
Yeah. And also, the more you interact with the people who go to these shows, these people go to other shows.
Yep.
And they'll be your advocate. They'll be like, "Hey, I feel like Patrick should be at you know, MAGFest or whatever. I should talk to the people who go to MAGFest and like hit up the message board and hit them up and try to network that way." So you hit them on both sides. Like,
yep.
Talk to the people who organize the con.
Yep.
Convince people who are fans of yours to tell other shows that, like, "I'm looking for other bookings. If you go to other cons in the area or if you do other shows, please let them know that I'm available." You know,
yeah,
work it that
way. So true point to what Jamie said. Otakon, we're going this weekend. We're going to hang out at Otakon. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to be hanging out with Art Fight. We're going to do Unleashed. I'm going to have a good time. God damn it, Jamie. Don't ruin this.
Are you going to have a good time, Brandon Chalmers?
Here's the thing. I may or may not have a good time actually at the con. I'm not a big con person. What I am is a fan of hanging out with Art Fight crew and Art Fight fans. I enjoy doing the shows. So at the very least, for the time that I'm going to be on stage, I'm going to be having a good time. The rest of the time, I'm going to be hanging out with my friends behind the table. It really can't be that bad.
That's true.
So, but more to my point, we cold called and sent requests to Otakon for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until we started a groundswell using Facebook and our fans to start bombing their forums and their panel submissions to actually get us in there. Fans got us in Otakon.
Yep.
they were the reason that we got there. We had something like, I think it was like 150 or 200 people or something like that start just talking about us in a forum and piling on and, excuse me, and talking about how great we were and blah, 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 and just lied to Otakon something fierce. No, I'm kidding. But, like, were just super supportive of us. That's why we got in.
Yeah.
Otakon emailed us for a change,
right,
and said, hey, there's been this really big groundswell. Are you guys available? And we, of course, like idiots, just went, hang on a second, we got to check our schedules. You know, we might be busy that weekend. Meanwhile, like, we're talking to each other on Google Chat. We're like, holy fucking shit, Otakon emailed us. This is awesome. It'll happen.
Yeah.
Gain that sort of following. Make those sort of connections. Don't be afraid to talk to anyone behind a table, at a con, whatever it is. Remember that your time is valuable, and some people, are time sucks, and you're going to have to figure out a hard out.
Yeah.
But talk to everybody. What's the next one?
And the last one is there like a network for convention organizers? And I don't know. I'm guessing there is, but I'm guessing they keep that pretty close-knit.
Yeah, there's a lot of I know, Jamie, we're involved in a Facebook group for webcomic artists.
Oh, yeah.
Which can be kind of hit or miss. It can be helpful in a lot of ways because you can, you know, you can ask, hey, what was AwesomeCon like? What was New York Comic Con like? And you can get people's interactions from a booth space to behind a sponsor booth to Artist Alley. People talk about that stuff. And it works sometimes, but it's also the internet, and it's also Facebook, and it's also forums. And for as much good as you're going to get, you're going to get a lot of bad. And if you put your opinion out there a little too much, you may end up burning somebody and not even realize it. So I would say when it comes to forums and stuff like that, man, personally, wade into that water real slow.
Yeah.
Dip a toe and remind yourself the same policy that you have when it comes to in person at conventions and talking with fans and talking with staff, you should probably have on the internet. Just keep that sort of thing in mind.
Yeah.
What you say doesn't go anywhere. It's forever enshrined. In some cases, you cannot delete it, and you're going to be paying for it for the rest of your online career.
Yeah.
Do not forget that shit. Seriously.
Yeah.
So if anything, I would say post your content, continue to post your content, continue to feed your fans. Let them be crazy for you. You talk to the right people. You keep fans. You keep, you know, form submitting, whatever it is. And what you may end up finding too is you're going to talk to someone like our contact at AwesomeCon, and they may know someone and introduce you to someone at New York Comic Con or Anime USA or Anime Expo or Wizard World or wherever. Mm-hmm. Because when you're at a certain level, you talk to people at a certain level. When you're at a higher level, you talk to people at a higher level. And if you're loyal and you're good and you're easy to work with and you're reliable, people go to bat for you. It's just like work. It's just like friendships. You're making relationships with these people. Don't forget that. Don't burn anybody. Don't talk shit behind anybody else's back. Always be honest. And when it comes to certain situations, sometimes it's better not to say anything. I'm notorious for being a loudmouth shit, and I'm telling you, sometimes it's better to bite your tongue.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. Sometimes people need a fucking ass chewing,
right,
and that's fine, but you're going to have to deal with the consequences of that.
And those are better to do in person anyway.
Well, oh, God, yeah. And if you happen to be at a local con where I'm at, do me a favor. Grab me. Pull me aside. I'll gladly tell you any sort of war stories you got. I'll have some one-on-one conversations that I will not have online, and I'll help you out in any way, shape, or form that I can. Because that's the other thing, too. Making relationships with other people at cons, that stuff matters, too.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick, for writing in. And
yeah,
this is a
good luck.
Yeah. Well, good luck at your stuff. Maybe we'll see you at a show.
Yes.
This is an open invitation to anybody. If you would like advice on anything, email us at info@fuckingdoitcast.com. I can't believe
it does not actually have to be about something we actually know something about. That just happened to be something that we have experience with.
Yeah.
And so, bear in mind, our experience and our understanding of this is from 10 years of doing cons, for me at least, Jamie probably longer.
Yeah, and, Jesus.
And take this as you will. We're beat up and we're jaded. So we may not be given the best advice, but, you know, just don't do anybody dirty. Like, really. That's all I can really tell you.
Don't be a shithead.
That shit hangs out forever. You'd be amazed the sort of reputation some people have that still hang around their neck.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to our topic for discussion. Wild Wild West.
Oh-ho!
Jim West.
Yeah!
Desperada. Yes! Rough Rider. No, you don't want nada. None of this. Six Gun in this. Brother Run in this. I could go on and on.
I'm the fucking revamp Will Smith's career. Hell yes.
So I'm kind of curious as why this is on here, because I actually, with all of its faults, I really enjoyed this movie.
So a lot of people pan the shit out of this movie.
Really?
Yes. Really? God, yes.
It's great.
And here's the thing, Jamie. Something that you and I share that a lot of people don't is I take a movie at its face value. And right. I say this in this kind of context. If a movie's supposed to be, much like Pacific Rim, about robots and monsters beating the crap out of each other, I am not expecting some sort of anything extra. If it passes the Bechdel test, if it happens to have a great friendship, if it happens to have awesome cinematography, rad.
Yeah.
But if you've met the bar of
robots punching,
this cast, robots, monsters, and fighting, we're good.
Yeah.
When you cast Will Smith in a Western that is more or less comic book based, I have an understanding of a Will Smith movie being a Will Smith movie.
It was so
watched
fun.
Men in Black.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing I never understood about hating on this movie. You watch Men in Black.
Yeah.
It's so much fun, but like, you watch Men in Black. What fucking part did you think you were going to get? You cast Jack Black.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
In a movie.
Yeah.
He has been the exact same character in everything.
Yeah.
Fucking everything, from High Fidelity all the way up to fucking, what was the most recent one? Jumanji, right. He's been the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't shouty, panicky motherfucker who doesn't understand everybody else and is a self-centered prick.
Yeah.
I'm not really clear at what point the character of Jack Black stops and the person of Jack Black starts.
He just shows up on set. He doesn't read the script. He just goes on set.
I don't think he reads shit. I think he Larry Davids the fuck out of every scene.
Yeah.
He just gets a little high and a little coked up, grabs a guitar. Someone says, Jack, it's not that time. They take the guitar off of him. They put him in a pith helmet. And then they send him out in the fucking jungle with Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm pretty convinced of.
Yeah, the thing about Wild Wild West, it's a fun romp. You got a giant mechanical spider at the end.
That mechanical spider is such a fucking thing.
Yeah.
So have you ever, and I'm assuming no, because you're a man of class. You were never really a Kevin Smith fan, right?
Oh, no, but I know the story about the mechanical
spider. About the mechanical spider,
yeah,
right.
I heard about
that.
That's
part of where all that hate came from, with that fucking mechanical spider. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing.
But there's one other aspect that I really loved about this movie, and it's the whole racial aspect. Like, here is a black man in the middle of the Wild West, and every time anyone tries to bring up his race or tries to say the N-word, Will Smith's character shuts it the fuck down. Like, slaps him in the head, shoots him up, you know. He just shuts it down. And they address it, and they deal with it, and it's beautiful. Like, you know, he's going in there. He doesn't belong. It's clear that he doesn't belong, but it doesn't matter because it's fucking Will Smith. And, you know, from that aspect, I love it. It's fun. There's a little bit of social commentary, and there's a giant fucking mechanical spider. Like, how can you lose?
Let's see. So, yeah, I've got an old Wild West thing. Okay, so them panning the old Wild West. I've got a couple things here. So here's the thing that I never understood about the movie here. And the giant spider, right?
Yes.
So the ridiculous thing. You've got the guy on the spider who reminds me of Jaws from a Bond movie.
Right.
Right? Remember the guy with the steel head? You've got the super techie guy who helps him out, which is basically a money penny,
mm-hmm.
and a Q kind of rolled into one.
Right.
You got the super swarthy guy who can do no wrong, right? Basically a Bond. Yeah. You've got Dr. Loveless, who is missing half of a body and is ultimate evil. He's a fucking Bond villain. This is a Bond movie set in the West.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course.
Right. I think it's fucking perfect. So here's my...
Me too!
Here's my feeling. I think you take this script, you push all of the Wild West stuff to modern day Britain, and you cast Idris Elba as James Bond, and you use this script almost fucking
deep. Oh, shit.
I bet every fucking mouth-breathing, hating-ass nerd wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Oh, my God. I agree with you. And you put the giant mechanical spider in it.
To put the fucking spider
you
in it.
Put the spider in it.
Right. And honestly, here's the thing. You don't make a spider, you make a scorpion.
Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah, you just change the bug. And then all of a sudden everybody would be like, this is fucking incredible. This is dope. Right. Yeah. We go back to like some old school Bond shit. You know, he gets like a submarine car or something like that. Or maybe he gets the submarine car and it's actually a giant mechanical octopus or some shit.
Oh, like, yeah. All in.
Right. Yeah. We can totally do this and make it happen. So now here's the only thing that I really wanted to tackle with this one.
Okay.
How do we get Will Smith to do movie songs again?
We pay him a lot of money.
Because I'm relatively convinced that movies lost their way in a lot of ways. Like, fun action movies lost their way right after Bad Boys 2.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, we need...
When Michael Bay got a hold of robots and got away from Will Smith, things just kind of took a turn.
Yeah, and did you see that the Will Smith movie with him and his son?
No.
I forgot what it was called.
I refuse to.
But that movie had no Will Smith song in it.
Right. I'm relatively convinced if I go back and I look, like, the Concussion movie didn't have a Will Smith song in it.
Yeah.
What other – hang on a second. Let me find a Will Smith IMDb. Let's see here. Yada, yada, yada.
But
Suicide Squad, I don't think had a Will Smith song.
Oh, Suicide Squad. No, that's true. No Will Smith song. That should have had a Will Smith song.
Fucking Bright, that straight to Netflix movie, which is actually surprisingly good. That's another fucking Will Smith movie that was exactly what it said it was going to be. And everybody's like, this fucking sucks. And like the part that really – here's the part that bothers me about this movie, Jamie. For the fandom, the only people that I agree with about whether or not this movie was good, unless you enjoyed it and you might be the lone person – every other person that I have talked to who has enjoyed this has either openly admitted to liking Nickelback, Creed, or Three Doors Down, or all three. And I feel like I'm in real, real touchy white-ass territory over here, Jamie. Like, and I can't tell. Like, here's what I'm thinking with the common denominator with all those three are. They fucking love orcs.
Oh, okay.
It's not a Will Smith thing.
It's an orc thing.
It's an orc thing, okay. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Their search history is real sketchy at best. Did I am
Rule 34 orc.
Right. I am Legend, I don't think, had it.
I Am Legend had no joy in it, therefore no Will Smith song.
Right. Collateral Beauty didn't have it. I don't even think Hancock had a fucking one.
Hancock should have had one.
Should have fucking had one. Yeah. Totally didn't. Yeah. 7 Pounds, no Will Smith song. I don't even think, like, hey, you know what? That's why I don't even enjoy Hitch.
No Will Smith song.
Yeah. Look, Jamie Noguchi, here's what I'm getting at. We are 18 years into the millennium, and I don't feel as though I am being embraced by the love of Will Smith anymore.
The Casbah has not been rocked. Yeah.
Like, I get that his daughter is whipping her hair. They're fine to live their lives. I get it. Kids are fucking nuts. His wife, off to go do whatever she pleases. But Will. Jamie, may I, if I can?
Sure.
Will, this is your old buddy, Brandon. buddy, I miss you. I do. I don't know if we need to get Michael Bay back in this thing and do Bad Boys 3 to kind of get this going. I'm sure Martin Lawrence could use the work.
Oh.